The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's a good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have John Wilner, all things around the Pac-12 of the NCAA tournament brackets laid out. John Wilner will be with us. Seth Joyner, the original NFL Network analyst. Always good to catch up with Seth. Been wanting to have Seth on to talk about the Cardinals' new coach, Jonathan Gannon, and what he sees, what he likes, what he doesn't like about this hire. Seth Joyner will be with us. Can Jonathan Gannon get Kyler Murray headed in the right direction? Was Seth surprised by this hire? Does he like the hire? Does he not like the hire? Seth is always one to lay it out there. And he covered the Eagles inside and out in Philadelphia, of course, Valley resident as well. So we'll have Seth Joyner with us. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their support. I think that there's just too much going on, which is great. We love it. NFL, the tampering season is here. Corbin Carroll gets his contract with the Diamondbacks. I've got some thoughts on that. And, of course, the NCAA tournament. And let's start there. First of all, do I think U of A can win a championship? The U of A fans are, because you're fans, of course you're going to say they will. Me, because I don't care one way or the other who wins, I just kind of look at it and say, are they tough enough? Are they tough enough? They don't have Ben Mathurin this year. Do they have a player late in games? Because they did come back and storm past UCLA and win the Pac-12 title. Doesn't mean they're going to do much in March. I think that they have a puncher's chance. I don't see a team that can play a consistent 40 minutes yet. UCLA had them. And then they found a way and came back. In the tournament, do you have that player that late in a game is going to say, I'm the one that can hit the big shot? Well, Brad, it's going to be Courtney Rain. It might be. Is it Pelle Larsen? Is it Krissa? Is it, you go down the list and, well, it's got to be Tabellus. Tabellus, well, bigs are bigs. Can you hit free throws late in games? Are you a good free throw shooting team? Are you tough enough? And so we'll get into that. Jordan Hamm will be with U of A in Sacramento starting on Wednesday. He will be covering the Wildcats in the tournament, and we'll talk with Jordan later in the week about U of A. Thursday is their game. I'm going to be in Denver. I'm going to go to Denver. I like the story of Grand Canyon a lot. I think Grand Canyon can actually get Gonzaga. I do. So Drew Timmy is player of the year caliber, no question. I got my John Wooden ballot today sent to me, and here's a player that you look at and you say, absolutely, he could be that guy. GCU's guards, their guards are really good. And don't give me the, they're really good and the whack. What's it going to be like in the tournament? You just don't know game to game. And I like the trajectory of Bryce Drew, the way that he has the team heading. Bryce Drew should be a guy that's in demand. He really should be. He's somebody that has done a tremendous job with GCU. When I was in Vegas last week, went and checked them out, and they were not good when they lost their player of the year, Javon Blackshear. He went down with a knee injury, and they weren't good. I saw them in mid-January, watched them on TV a bunch. Not good. They were 3-4 right after they lost him. And then they figured it out. They got to turn around, they're heading in the right direction. So I feel like GCU can make some noise. Arizona State, actually, I do think they're gritty. Do think they're tough. Not surprised that they made the Final Four. It doesn't matter, the first four, as they like to now call it. Let's be honest. It's the Final Four at the front of the tournament. These are the last four that make it in. Well, they want to call it the first four. It's all marketing. But Bobby's still, the whole contract thing just turned me off on what's going on over there. It's not towards him. It's not towards the kids. It's typical ASU. It's always something university. Like, come on, guys. It just isn't that hard. He's won 22 games a season. Yeah, he had some bad losses down the stretch. And yeah, he had a clunker against USF that we could see a mile away. Had a clunker against Texas Southern that was really bad. So the fact that he's still sitting here kind of twisting, I just don't like it. It's not that hard. It just isn't that hard. It's great to have three teams. It's great. I wish we would have had a fourth. I went to Boise to check out NAU. They were this close. But I think they ran out of gas. But we're into the tournament. I'll be in Denver. Jordy will be in Sacramento, and the two of us will get out there and get after it. Be interested to see the Suns tonight. So they play at Golden State. Monty Williams has to make a decision about load management, in my opinion. You know, Durant being out. You can have James Jones say, yeah, if it were the playoffs, he'd start today. It's March. Phil's notebook sounds good to talk about for an hour or so, but it's not my deal. I mean, just stuff, just noise. Just get to the postseason, please. Does he load manage Chris Paul or Devin Booker or DeAndre Ayton, given that tomorrow night they're home to Milwaukee? Does he do that? I'd be interested to see. Corbin Carroll. So this story is really picked up steam in my view. I went out to see Corbin Carroll at spring training over at HoHoCam. It was the first day of games. And I could have gone to see the main guys, but I wanted to see the kids because that's what has fans excited, okay? I think the fans have been hearing about and hearing about and hearing about. And here's a guy in Corbin Carroll that the Diamondbacks, I think to their credit, is very smart. They gave him an 8-year contract. He's only been in what is it? He's had less than 100 days of service time, you know? And they gave him $111 million. And you're thinking, that's the dumbest thing ever. Well, if you know, you know. You can get hurt. Yeah, so could I. So could you. If you know, you know. And I know about Corbin Carroll. That is greatness right there. On and off the field, the way that he's handled himself. And this is not a guy that's going to take the foot off the accelerator. And what it says to the other young guys within the organization, they have a ton of them. You know, Jones, Al Thomas and Lawler, and just go right down the line. These young guys are saying, well, man, if he got his, maybe I can get mine. And they have him tied up for financial certainty. So when you're building a roster and you say, that's our guy, that's where he's going to play, we have this done for a long, long time, rather than we're going to go into free agency every year and we're going to throw money every year to try to figure out what we've done right and what we haven't done right. So I like this. And he's a fan. He's already become, just seeing him there and then a couple other times out at Talking Stick when I've been out to spring training, he's already got the fan base excited. He does. I think this is a good move. John Wilner here in a couple of minutes. Four Pac-12 teams make it. It's also the start of spring football. So we'll talk with John about that. Today is the day for Kenny Dillingham. He's meeting with media today. At Arizona State, we'll bounce around the Pac-12, talk some football and basketball. That's next with John Wilner. And then Seth Joyner, always outspoken, always opinionated on Jonathan Gannon and the hire by the Cardinals. I'm Brad Sussmat. We're back with John Wilner next. John Wilner for a couple of minutes. None better covering the Pac-12 from across the fruited plain than John Wilner. Follow him on Wilner Hotline, inside and out. I want to get to you about spring football, but let's start with the tournament. All right, general thoughts on the Pac-12. Four make it in. What's your view of the four and how it turned out?
Well, it could have been a lot worse. There was a period of time during the season when the Pac-12 was looking at two bids or three bids. Four is a victory, all things considered. ASU, second to last team in the field. You know, I thought ASU should have been gotten in with a little bit more room to spare than they did. They had a lot of good wins away from home, which is important. So, look, I think Arizona and UCLA certainly are Final Four candidates. UCLA's injuries are definitely going to be a key piece. The matchups are going to be super important for Arizona. It is hard to see ASU or USC, you know, making a whole lot of progress. Maybe you get a win. Maybe you don't. You're happy to be there. But on the whole, the Pac-12 avoided what could have been a major embarrassment.
Okay, so I think the injury side is where I want to go with you first. UCLA loses Clark. He's down. Creasa gets hurt in the tournament in Vegas and didn't look like the same player to me. And yet they're still able to win the conference tournament, which you expect if you're a U of A fan. But John, their guard play is still so up and down. And
yeah.
I really think if you look at the matchup where U of A runs against some solid guard play And that's an overarching statement for the tournament. But I think they're going to be in some trouble against some tough guards.
I do, too. And that was the case last year against Houston, right? Houston just dominated on the perimeter. I think, to me, it gets down for Arizona to toughness. Hmm. The NCAA tournament are rock fight games, especially in the second half. And how tough is Arizona inside and outside, but especially on the perimeter, right? I mean, I don't think Kirk Kreese is a great guard for the NCAA tournament, right? To me, Kylan Boswell may end up being more important to the Wildcats. Certainly, how are those other guys, Henderson and Ramey, Larson, you know, how are they going to defend? What's going to happen on the loose balls, the offensive rebounds, those manufacturing baskets at the end of the shot clock, right? Who on the perimeter is going to make a play? There's no Mathurin around. I do wonder, because if you're playing, you know, there's going to be teams that have answers for Tubelis, because they may get him off the floor because he can't guard anybody, right? So we'll see. But there is definitely Arizona more than UCLA. It's going to depend on the matchups and whether they're tough. UCLA is tough. That's not an issue. I am curious to see how tough Arizona is.
Okay, Arizona State, they view to you as a tough team?
Yeah, I think Arizona State is tough and scrappy. That's kind of their identity in a lot of respects. To me, for ASU, it's about making shots, right? Because there's that old saying, defense travels, which is true. But in the NCAA tournament, you have got to be able to score because everybody's playing good defense, right? Defense is about effort. Offense is skill. In the tournament, everybody's playing with maximum effort. Is ASU going to be able to score, right? I think they can score enough. If they play well, they should beat Nevada. Nevada struggled down the stretch. But, you know, that second game, TCU, that's going to be a tough one for the Sun Devils.
Of course, we're rooting for GCU against ASU. That's what we want.
Yes. I think GCU's got a chance against Gonzaga. Gonzaga, if you can keep Drew Timmy contained, they're beatable this year. They are not, the high-level talented team that they used to be.
And no, I agree with you on that. John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. Spring football is here. It gets started this week. I don't want to get too in-depth, too inside football on this one, but from a distance, John, some programs that you're like, Brad, this is kind of interesting this week now that spring football is here.
I mean, number one is Colorado, right? Just because everything about Deion Sanders is interesting. And they're getting started, I think, at the end of the week, and it's going to be the most watched Colorado spring practice in eons just to see how is he managing, right? Not any of the details about the roster, but how does Deion coach? Is he going to be hands-on and a micromanager? Is he more the CEO type? Everything about Colorado is interesting. ASU, same thing. You got a very young first-time head coach, a retooled staff. What message is Dillingham going to send in terms of how he's going to manage the program, right? Forget about, issues like quarterback, offensive line. Yeah. What is Dillingham's style of coaching going to be? And that's going to tell us a lot about next season.
And I think in Tucson for Jed, it's a pretty veteran group returning.
Yeah.
Actually. So, he's been on the ground a couple of years now, able to implement, recruit. This should be a year where they break through a little bit more, right, John?
It should. I think a lot of Arizona's issue is going to be Jane DeLora. Is he going to make the next step, right? He's a pretty good quarterback, but he's erratic, a lot of mistakes. Is he going to get to the point where his efficiency is at the next level, the interception total's down, the completion percentage is up, his comfort level is high? To me, that's the biggest question. You can start to see a little bit of that in spring ball, but really it's not going to show itself until you get into the season.
I mean, there's things like Kalen DeBoer. Can he do it again at Washington? At Oregon, you have a situation where the quarterback is there. In USC, you have a Heisman Trophy returner. It's the last year for USC and UCLA in the Pac-12. Pick any of those topics off the board and go a little bit further.
Well, I mean, the biggest story for the Pac-12 is the quarterbacks. It's just loaded, right? Now, Cam Rising at Utah has got a serious leg injury. and is not going to be available in spring ball. But, you know, Washington State, Oregon State, I'm going with Arizona, Utah, Colorado, USC. They all know who's going to be starting at quarterback in the fall. And that's a big difference from what we're used to, right? There have been many years recently where there was quarterback competitions all over the place in the Pac-12. And that is a more stable situation. So the focus is more on the other 21 positions, which aren't as interesting, frankly.
John Wilner with us. John, thanks.
Thanks very much, Brad.
The Original is back with us, the Original NFL Network analyst, Seth Joyner, who, of course, does all things around the Eagles, covers the NFL from his view, very in-depth content that he brings your way. All right, I'm going to take you back to February 16th. That was the day that Jonathan Gannon was hired as head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. You've been there in Philly. You've seen it up close through the Super Bowl run. What was your reaction? What are your thoughts on this hire?
Well, you know, Brad, myself personally, I've been shocked at, you know, the amount of attention that that Jonathan has received, even over last year, becoming a head coach for the NFL. I think when you listen to him talk in press conferences, you get the understanding, you get the belief that, you know, he's been coached well. He knows all the right things to say, knows all the right things to do. But I'm shocked. I was 100% shocked that, you know, he got as much attention as he got last year. And shocked that he actually, you know, got a job this year. But, you know, when you coach the number two ranked defense in the National Football League, and, you know, you take a team that was, you know, on the outs last year, be able to get the last seed in the playoffs last year, and then go to the Super Bowl, and come within 3 points of winning. I guess this is the residual, you know, situations like that. You know, my concerns have always been is him as a defense coordinator, is his inability, you know, to be more aggressive, and his ability to make adjustments on the fly when need be. And I think those are the same two things that cost the Philadelphia Eagles the Super Bowl, was their inability in the second half to be able to stop Patrick Mahomes. A lot of what they do is predicated, or what they did was predicated on their ability to rush the passer. The field conditions, although everyone said, oh, you know, both teams had to play on the same field. Well, the strength of the Philadelphia Eagles defense was their pass rush, and their pass rush wasn't necessarily nullified by the opposing team's, you know, offensive line. It was nullified by the field when you watch them slip and slide all over the place. So that was the advantage to the Kansas City Chiefs, in my opinion. It also was, you know, their advantage that, you know, all year long they had a defense coordinator who was very passive in how he called defenses. Now, he had a great defensive line. That defensive line broke the record of the guys that I played with, you know, as far as the franchise is concerned. So I get it. When you see that, people are like, oh, well, you don't need to blitz because, you know, you're getting pressure. You got four guys with, you know, double-digit sacks. Never been done in the National Football League. I get that. But there's a circumstance and there's a time in every single game where pressure is required, because pressure is what creates turnovers. And if you go back and you break the Eagles, you know, year off in segments, and you ask yourself, okay, where did they make, you know, where did they create turnovers? And where were the lulls where they didn't create turnovers? When they were getting pressure and they were wreaking havoc, they were getting turnovers. The times where they weren't, and times where they weren't being aggressive, you know, from a blitz perspective or a pressure perspective, they had lulls. That's just a fact. Now you fast forward to where Jonathan Gannon is now. This defense and these players, a guy like Buda Baker, is extremely aggressive, you know. And Vance Joseph, you know, for all the flaws that he had, you know, he's one of the most aggressive defense coordinators in the National Football League, over 40%. You're not going to see that next year. So how does a player adjust to having to play that way when they've been molded and shaped to be aggressive? Now you make them passive. And I always say that the players take on the identity of their coordinators and their head coach. If the head coach is aggressive and the defense coordinator is aggressive and the offensive coordinator is aggressive, the mindset of the players are aggressive. But when you're passive all the time, that's hard for an aggressive nature player or player in general, in my opinion, to play that way, because this is an aggressive football. It's an aggressive game.
What about Kyler and Gannon? I mean, Seth, is this ultimately the Kyler Murray rehab is much like he and Cliff were tied at the hip? Jonathan Gannon is going to have to figure out a way to get to Kyler Murray and push him through. Passiveness doesn't sound like the way to go with him. So far, it's been, oh, we saw each other in the parking lot and basketball and ha-ha and laugh. I'm just kind of looking at this saying, is this the right guy to get Kyler in the right direction, or is it really going to come down just to the coordinators and Kyler?
Well, listen, this is my thought. I think Kyler Murray could have been greatly benefited from having a guy like Sean Payton. Sean Payton is not taking any crap. You know, I just think that, you know, the Cardinals set themselves up for failure with Cliff Kingsbury, because he required that if I'm taking this job, you're going to draft Kyler Murray. We just drafted Josh Rosen, number 9 last year. Yeah. Okay. You want me, trade him and get me Kyler Murray. I can make that work. They acquiesced to it, and it didn't work out because there wasn't the respect factor that was necessary, you know. And I'm not saying this is someone who didn't watch it. You can watch the game and see the interaction between the head coach and the player, the play caller and the player, and some of the things that were said, and understand that the respect factor wasn't there. There's a reason why you're the coach and you're the player, okay? And the Cardinals put themselves in position again by signing Kyler Murray to a deal where he forced their hand. And how do you rein that in? How do you go and bring in a coach who is going to put down the gavel and say, this is how we're going to do things? You're not going to run the ship. You're going to be a part of why the ship runs efficiently, because my staff is going to put you in position to make the most effective decisions. I just don't know that Jonathan Gannon is the guy to get that done. And if he is, I'd be amazed to see it. Mm. It's going to be real interesting to watch this relationship, you know, over the next couple of years to see how it develops. I don't know, Brad. I'm for anybody who can advance in this world to advance in this world. But when I think about coaching and I look at certain players and I realize what they need, I've been around this game a long time.
Yeah.
Kyler Murray needs someone strong will, someone that he respects, someone that's proven, not someone that's still just trying to prove themselves at being the best at what they do. He needs someone that can put on the game film and say, hey, listen, this is my system. This works. This works because, you know, I've been to a Super Bowl before. This works because, you know, this Hall of Famer, and I coached that Hall of Famer, okay? Where you're trying to go, I've already taken people there, you know? So you need a guy like that with a guy like Kyler Murray. It's not that he can't do it. You know, he's not accomplishing it because, you know, he thinks that he has all the answers. That's dangerous for a guy, you know, who's supposed to be the face of your franchise. You know, if he can't humble himself and be one of the guys and realize that he's part of the problem as well as sometimes being part of the solution, then you got problems on your hand.
Point blank, can Jonathan Gannon get it done here in Arizona with Kyler Murray, from your view?
I'm going to give Jonathan Gannon the benefit of the doubt. But if I was leaning one way or the other, I would lean towards the fact that I believe that he cannot get it done under the circumstances of where the Cardinals are and what they need to do long term in order to fix this. This might not be, Brad, a 2-3 year fix, even in the modern era of, you know, free agency.
Right.
A guy like when you got a superstar, you got a superstar wide receiver like DeAndre Hopkins that wants out. Okay. That's telling. That's pretty telling. Especially, you know, when he's got a quarterback that's going to feed him 15 targets a game, he may go somewhere where he might only get 7 or 8. But when a guy like that wants out, you know, he also realized it's going to take time. And he knows that he's on the back nine of his career, and he wants to get somewhere, you know, where he can be, have an opportunity to compete. And I just believe it's a long-term fix. And I'm going to find it hard to believe, I'm just going to say it, I find it hard to believe that Jonathan Gannon is the answer.
As always, I appreciate your time and your insights, Seth. Thanks.
You got it, my friend.